It is April 26, 2011 on Gerwick.net. I'm Steve Gerwick, joined right now with a special guest, a former TNA and WWE superstar, Lance Hoyt, who you may remember as Vance Archer in ECW and SmackDown. It's Lance Hoyt. How you doing, Lance?
I'm good, man. How are you doing today?
I'm doing outstanding. We appreciate your time today.
No, man. I appreciate you having me on, for sure.
Always a pleasure talking, and I guess the first question, and probably the most obvious question I have for you, Lance, a lot of people that think you're a very talented guy, and I definitely agree with that. Great big man. And, you know, we just had a draft last night. They're changing the rosters up a little bit. We see what's going on with TNA and Impact.
Right.
I guess the most obvious question for you, Lance, for me asking you is, why are you not in TNA or in WWE?
That's a damn good question. Unfortunately, I think the business itself has dropped off a lot. You know, WWE, when my time came to an end there and the conversation I had when I was leaving, and it really, really sounded more or less like it was a budgetary reason. You know, I think in the past, guys who weren't being used very prominently or whatever the situation was, a lot of times they were just given time off, you know, or they were just not on television much, or they were just used very sparingly. And the time was you waited your time, and when that time came about and they had an opportunity to give you another chance, they would. Right now, I think in the business, unfortunately, you know, with the economy the way it is and, you know, the changing of the guard as it is, you know, and the fans have to start accepting the new superstars, you know, the company itself just didn't have that time, opportunity, resource, whatever you want to say. And so, you know, myself and 13 others got released on the same time, you know, and including some writers and, you know, a referee and all kinds of stuff when I got released with WWE. You know, and the conversations I've had with them since then are very positive to the idea of possibly getting back at some point in the future. You know, guys have come and gone a lot in this business. And, you know, and that's my hope, is that at some point in the future a door reopens, or if it cracks open, I'll just kick it open. But yeah, you know, I really think my time at WWE was just budgetary. Why am I not at TNA? You know, I think, again, there's another thing there. Their resources, their financial resources are nowhere even close to what WWE is. And, you know, they've got a pretty stacked roster, a bunch of good guys, guys that, you know, in my opinion, are good friends of mine and deserve more time, more opportunity than they're even getting right now. And they're with the company, so... You know, for somebody like me who, even though I have a past there and I think I would fit right in and I would explode and excel beyond anybody's expectations if I showed back up in TNA, getting in that door because of what their situation is financially, I think, is the hardest part. It's just getting somebody to go, okay, now we can spend that money there. You know, I think really it's just budgetary. I don't think it has anything to do with me personally. I don't think it has anything to do with my skill or lack of skill or whatever anybody's opinion is of that. I just think it's a point of getting somebody to write that check so that it'll give me that opportunity.
You know, I can really, you know, buy if it's a budgetary matter with TNA. As you said, the two companies are very far apart when it comes to finances.
Right.
You know, we know that TNA has had their problems financially in the past.
Right.
With WWE, it seems like every quarter they're reporting, you know, record profits, and this is up and sales are up. And so it seems to me that, and I know, you know, they told a lot of the guys they let go, and women too, that it's budgetary reasons, but at the same time, it's kind of, you look at their financial matters and record profit, and you kind of think, is it really a budgetary matter, or is it maybe what I'm kind of thinking, Lance, in your case, and probably with a lot of the guys they let go back in November when you were let go, it's just a creative thing that, you know, their roster expands, and at some point they just say, you know, we got too many guys on the roster, we have to let a few go.
Yeah, and that may be true in itself, but, you know, I mean, at the same time, when I was there, I saw how the houses were, the house shows, the live events, the even television, how many people were actually showing up in comparison to what you did see on television and things like that. And, you know, so maybe there's a little bit of both. I just think back in the day, even when things were down, the money they had so much money that they could just hand over fist, spend it, and they didn't mind. Like I said, guys like me in my situation when I was in WWE, I think were just either sent home until they could come up with something new for them to do. They were kept under contract, they were kept in a paycheck, and they were kept in the system. Now it's more or less, like you said, they didn't have anything for me, unfortunately. Right. And they're thinking, you know, instead of continuing to pay me just to sit at home or to travel every week to television and not do anything, their mindset is they'll save themselves that money. And then, you know, a year from now, if something does come up creatively for me and I keep, you know, kicking at the door, then they'll let me back in and we'll keep going from that point. So I think in their mind, it's two things. It's one, like you said, there's kind of a lack of creativity going ahead for me. And then there's also they're thinking about their budget and they're going, well, we need to spend that money while we're not doing anything with him, or we cannot spend that money while we're not doing anything with him. And then in how much ever time's needed, we can bring him back at that time, and then we'll start paying him again at that point. So,
how did you learn of your release, and what did they tell you specifically? Did they kind of encourage you to go on the indie scene, continue to work, to train, or have they kind of kept the door open from your perspective of a possible return to WWE?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, it was the conversation, as good of a conversation as it could have been in that situation, it was a positive one, you know, and it was a phone call, and, you know, it was just, here's what we're doing, this is what's going on, you know, just understand the situation is this, you know, and, you know, there's always going to be an open door, and they had no qualms about the idea of me coming back at some point in the future, and, you know, the person I spoke with was just very, you know, animated about me staying out there, and if this is something I wanted, you know, keep pushing at it and working at it. And they've actually helped me out in areas of getting, you know, back to certain places. Like I'll be going back to Japan here pretty soon and things like that. And some of that's directly from help of them. And, you know, like I said, I think the door is still open. It's just a point of me keeping pushing forward, and keeping myself ready for that time when that opportunity comes. I gotta kick somebody's head off. I don't know how to say it.
Two-part question. Okay. When you left TNA, or you parted ways with TNA, mm-hmm. you went to ECW immediately. Mm-hmm. What was your thought when they assigned you to the ECW roster, and what was your first reaction to the name Vance Archer?
Well, I mean, I actually, you know, I spent a little time down in Tampa at the FCW product, and that's kind of where that was created. The Vance Archer name, you know, WWE is very animate about owning their product, you know, and Lance Hoyt is my real name, so it was something that couldn't be used necessarily, or it could be, it's just they had to make that choice. Vance is obviously a play on Lance, and Archer is my father's name, so that's where that came about.
Okay, very good. I didn't realize that, so that's makes sense. What was your reaction when you were assigned to ECW?
It happened so fast. It was just I was just glad to be back on television. You know, I mean, I had about 6 months down in Tampa at FCW, working hard, trying to figure out. You know, and WWE truly does have its own unique style of work, and you know that was a good thing for me. I think there's been a couple guys in the past that have tried to jump from one to the other, and they really didn't understand how WWE worked and didn't really succeed very well. And for me, when going down to the CW, it was a good place. You know, Dr. Tom Pritchard, Steve Kern, Dusty Rhodes, Norman Smiley, these were all guys that were extremely influential to me and helpful, and they helped me out a lot and were right there, you know, on the button with what, you know, WWE was wanting from their product, from their talent. And, you know, I mean, it helped me out a lot in the transition. And, you know, the time that I came with that was assigned to ECW. It really was, got a phone call on a Saturday, said, hey, you need it for television, showed up. And, you know, I really didn't even know what was going on until somebody was like, hey, we'll get some more information for your profile later today. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess I am doing something tonight. And, you know, that's kind of how it all came about. And heck, I still had hair down to my middle of my back and a goatee that was braided, you know, 3 inches off my chin 5 minutes before doors opened, and then a decision was made to change the look, which, you know, which I debuted at with the shorter hair and no facial hair and things like that. So, you know, but I thought it was good. It was a good change. It was a good difference. Even my dad didn't even recognize me when he saw me that night on television.
Wow.
My stepmom was like, that's your son. And he's like, who? Where? She's like, right there. And he's like, oh, my goodness. Because, again, everybody had seen or known me with the long hair and the crazy beard and, you know, completely different look as I showed up that day.
Well, since you mentioned your parents and your family, what was their reaction when you kind of broke into the business and that you, you kind of told them that, you know, this was something I really wanted to do. What was their reaction to their son Lance or their brother or their sister or their cousin Lance going into professional wrestling?
You know, it was my mom was probably extremely supportive. She was always the one, you know, I played football in college or high school and college, and she was the one that was at pretty much every game and there for everything and just kind of got into it and enjoyed it. You know, she went to a lot of the independent shows I did before I was even with TNA, and, you know, she was right there cheering and screaming and yelling and having a good time and messing with the other guys and things like that. So, you know, she was, I wouldn't say more accepting, just she enjoyed it more. My dad he's a very good man. He's a very straightforward man. You know, he's educated himself, and I was in school at the time. I was going to Texas State University, and it was always kind of like, but that's good, son. Have a good time. Don't get hurt, but, you know, finish school. That was his big thing. And, you know, so he was supportive, but he wasn't, you know, siskoon by. He wasn't, you know, grabbing the pom-poms and helping me go. He wasn't that kind of guy, and it was okay with me that way, you know, because he kept me grounded. And I don't think it was until when I got signed with TNA the first time, back in 2004, and I called him because I was driving home from Nashville, Tennessee to Dallas, Texas, which is about a 9.5-hour drive. And I did that for the first 4 or 5 months I was with TNA. You know, I called him and I was like, Dad, if I could just let you know, I just got a contract with TNA, which is the only other organization that is really doing that at this point. You know, there's WWE, obviously, and there's TNA. And he's like, really? He's like, well, they're going to pay you? And I was like, yeah, they're going to pay me. He's like, they're going to pay you well enough to live? And I was like, for the most part, yeah. And he was like, oh, wow, you know. And I think from that point on, when he started realizing that I could actually make a living at it instead of just doing what I was doing on the independents, which God bless the independents because they're a lot of fun, and you know, you sharpen your teeth there and you learn the business, I think, in many aspects on the independents, but it was still just independent wrestling, and it was the money that was there was not very much. And I think that one of his proudest points was when TNA actually put out the action figure and it had Lance Hoyt on it, you know, so it was kind of cool for him as a family, you know, that he got him and was showing it off to his friends. So my parents were supportive, my mom a little more so than my dad in the beginning, but I think when I really showed that I could make a living out of it, my dad actually got more on board. So sorry if that was too long, but that's kind of how it was.
I tell you, you know, when you've made it in wrestling, when you have an action figure and or you're in a video game.
Well, now I've accomplished both, then.
I heard you're not much of a gamer.
No.
I guess, how do you feel when, I don't know if your family members are playing the game and suddenly they, on the screen there's Vance Archer in the ring and you're kind of thinking, hey, that's me, you know, and then somebody's actually controlling you. How does it feel funny? Because I can't even imagine what it'd be like to be a part of a video game. What kind of goes through your mind when you see yourself out there and, you know, somebody's actually controlling you?
You know, it was pretty cool, man. I mean, like I said, I'm not much of a gamer, but, you know, the first opportunity I got to play the game, it was pretty cool just to see how they'd done it and see and I knew the pictures that had been taken so that they created the avatar for the game and whatnot. And, you know, it was kind of cool. It was kind of cool being able to, you know, punch myself in and kick all the people's butts that I wanted to kick when I was there. No, it was pretty cool. It's kind of surreal, you know, and it's kind of a fun accomplishment. And, you know, I hope that I get the opportunity to accomplish that much more than just the one time, but it was real cool, and I think for my family, real cool too. Especially because I got, you know, a niece and a nephew that are about the niece is 14, I believe, and my nephew he's around 10 or so. So, you know, they're more into all that stuff than I am. So I think it's kind of even more cool for them to be able to plug it in and play their uncle.
Yeah, I definitely think so. That would be a lot of fun. I wanted to ask you about ECW. Of course, ECW came to an end. You were still there.
Yeah.
And then they decided to move you to SmackDown. What was kind of the reaction at the end of ECW? Did you kind of figure ECW had run its course? And then once ECW ended, what did you kind of expect to happen to you? Did you hope to go to Raw or SmackDown, like, make sense for your career? Or what were your thoughts on that?
You know, I mean, I think for a lot of us, ECW is a great place, you know, regardless of what people thought of ECW, especially the WWE version of ECW. It was a great place. I mean, you look at it now, and a lot of the guys that are your top guys, Kofi Kingston, Sheamus, Evan Bourne, Jack Swagger, and Punk, you know, all these guys that started on their ECW product and are doing what they're doing on television for them now. And it was a great place for guys, you know, that were being introduced into the WWE universe to you know, sharpen their teeth, to get wet with the crowd and let the people start to understand them and get to know them as a character and then move on and forward and so on and so forth. So when ECW came to an end, you know, it bothered a lot of us because we knew what it provided opportunity-wise, and even some of the guys that were not being used or going to be used very prominently on one of the other products was getting an opportunity to continuously work and continue to keep their name out there and work with some of the younger talent and build new feuds. You know, so when all that came to an end, because we were all kind of under the impression that ECW itself was coming to an end, but that there was going to be another show, kind of like ECW, just a new branded name show, and that we would all kind of continue on, but just on our own product, not ECW, but something else. And then, you know, when it got changed and decided to be turned into NXT, you know, it's pitched to us like it was a great thing, but for all of us, we kind of understood that it wasn't going to be the best opportunity for us. For the guys that were getting the opportunity, you know, obviously your Wade Barrett's, Gabriel's, Heath Slater's, all those guys from the first season who, you know, formed Nexus and so on and so forth, it was a great opportunity. It was a great opportunity for those guys, but for us that were a part of ECW, we knew that it was not the greatest situation. But, you know, very quickly we were kind of understood as to what we would be doing and where we would be going and things like that. And, you know, for me, you know, I kind of understood that I would be a part of SmackDown. You know, I obviously didn't show up on SmackDown for about 3 or 4 months, but, you know, as long as I was there, I knew that there was an opportunity, and it was, you know, a situation where I was going to try to take advantage of it as best I could at any opportunity. But, you know, with ECW ending, it was not, in my opinion, the greatest situation for myself and many others, because I was getting a good push, I think, in ECW, and then when that stopped, so did it. So.
I want to, you know, last night was the WWE draft, and I just wonder, what's the perception within the locker room? Obviously, Raw is like the mothership show. It's the main show. It's the A show. Is there a perception with the talent that if you're on the Raw show, you're kind of on a higher level than if you're on SmackDown, the B show? Is there kind of a perception in the locker room?
Maybe to some small degree, but again, it just depends on where you're at within the company, I think. You know, obviously, if you're a top guy and you're getting constant airtime and working in the top feuds and things like that, I think, you know, yeah, I guess Raw can kind of seem that way because it's live, it's Monday night, it's the kind of the flagship program. I mean, don't say that to the people who write and write SmackDown. You know, those guys would get pretty upset with you if you tell them that they're the B show, you know. And I think a lot of it just has to do with what's your position in the company and what opportunities you're getting. SmackDown does provide, I think, a little more of an opportunity for younger guys, guys who may not get that big of a opportunity and push on Raw, to get that opportunity and push on SmackDown, kind of like it was ECW was for some of us, you know, that wouldn't get that same opportunity on SmackDown or Raw. SmackDown provides that chance for some of those guys to really be seen as a top guy in comparison to if they were on Raw and where they might be and what they might be doing. You know, the time and opportunity is so precious in this business, and that's exactly what every talent needs, is time and opportunity. I've said that many times, and you know, if you're not given that time or opportunity, there's nothing you can do. You know, it's hard to succeed if you get 3 minutes on Superstars.
Right. At this point in your career, what do you consider your biggest strength, and what do you consider your biggest weakness?
Biggest strength, I believe I have a true personality that has barely been tapped into. I think my physical prowess, my size, and agility, which I don't think were truly displayed while I was with WWE, is something that you don't see a lot of guys my size being able to do so fluently. Weakness, I think sometimes I'm too much of a nice guy. You know, I want to be a nice guy. That's just me. That's my personality. I have no desire to stab anybody in the back. I want to work hard and earn my place, but sometimes that's not the best way to succeed in the business. I don't know how else to say it.
Right.
So that would be probably my biggest weakness, is being too nice sometimes.
You were talking about, you know, when you originally signed with TNA in 2004. How did that come to be, and how was the locker room at that time? Obviously, it's much different today. I just wonder how the locker room has changed over the years in TNA.
I haven't been there in a few years, so I don't know how it is exactly right now. I mean, when I signed on in 2004, you know, TNA was a company. We were only doing the Wednesday night pay-per-views
right.
out of Nashville. It was a company that was looking for any and every opportunity to grow and get bigger. You know, there was sprinkled names, guys who had done a little bit of stuff at the time in the business, but there were a lot of young guys that were, you know, ready and eager and willing and working hard and, you know, doing a good job at, you know, creating that niche that was TNA at that time in 2004. And, you know, at that time, the company was just looking for ways to grow, and they were. You know, I was there when we first started on Fox Sports Network, and I was there when we first started on Spike TV. I was there when we stopped being on Fox Sports Network and were doing internet shows and monthly pay-per-views leading into Spike TV that first, you know, and that first time in that October. And, you know, I mean, it was a fun time. It was an exciting time because, like I said, we were trying to grow. The locker room, I think, was very, you know, everybody was there and ready to work with each other, and how do we all work together to make a better product. Again, I've been there a few years, so I don't know exactly how it is and the people who are kind of in charge of the company right now. But, you know, obviously things change, and, you know, I'm hoping that those guys kind of still are there and trying to work together and work with each other to try to do the best they can. You know, again, time and opportunity. What time are they given? What opportunity are they given? And they'll do what they can with what they can. I mean, I think if you look at guys like Beer Money, the Machine Guns, you know, one of those things that TNA, I think, had done well for a long time was they had such a strong tag team division. I mean, the Machine Guns, I don't think you can find two guys that have better timing with each other. Those guys are on point with each other like no other team, I think, has ever existed in this business. Beer Money, I mean, James Storm's obviously been a part of the two biggest tag teams in TNA history. With AMW back in that time with him, and then now with Beer Money, him and Robert Roode, those two guys have just, they've turned into, you know, an element that I don't think anybody expected originally, and, you know, because they were two individuals, and they've created such a strong tag team, it's awesome, you know. And then they've got a lot of young guys, their X-Division, you know, some of the guys that I think some people don't even realize how talented they are, you know, and stuff like that. So, I mean, TNA has a lot of good young talent that if they're ready and willing to build on and make stars, they will absolutely be stars, you know. And the guys that are over there working their butts off, too, Matt Morgan's, Ken Anderson's, those guys, you know, really doing what they're doing. Sting, he's stayed loyal to TNA and, you know, helped the company. And, it's, you know, he is Sting. Heck, he's the reason I got in the business. And so, you know, there's a lot of great elements over there. You know, hopefully they can continue to move forward and do best for themselves, the company, and the guys that are there.
I want to ask you about Sting, but first, when we're talking a little bit about your WWE stint, was only about a year. Mm-hmm. Once you made it to the main roster, and obviously you were there for a few years in TNA. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like in either company you really were given an opportunity to show what Lance Hoyt is really all about?
You know, at WWE, I don't think so. I mean, I think there was initially there was some decent push, and I think if ECW would have stuck around or if it would have changed just to another show, I think more opportunity would have come because that would have kind of been my show, my opportunity. When that stopped, now I'm kind of put into what everybody else is a part of. I don't think so, and not my WWE time. TNA, I think there were glimpses of it, but there were times in TNA where, you know, the company decided to go in certain directions, and they felt like that was best. And unfortunately, I wasn't a part of what they felt was best. And so I was pulled back and kept at a certain spot as they tried to advance themselves and the company and things like that. And I think at my time in TNA, because I was there for pretty much 5 years, I think there was a lot of thought at different times that, like, you know, we'll get to him, we'll take care of him, it'll be fine. But unfortunately, it just never came about, you know, and there was different, you know, when the Rock and Rave came about, we had a lot of fun doing Rock and Rave, but it just wasn't, I think, allowed to blossom like it even could have, you know, because I think Jimmy Rave was beyond an amazingly talented kid. Can work his butt off. He's as smooth as anybody I've ever seen in the ring. And, you know, with me and the size and the power and things like that, and even the agility I had, I thought as a tag team, Rocket and Infection, even though we were kind of a fun, loving, goofy, you know, bunch of guys, and Christy Henney, who's beyond smoking hot, you know, I think we had a mix there that could have worked really well. But again, we weren't really given that time and opportunity to succeed at that. So
I would agree. I definitely agree. I don't think you really were given an opportunity, really, in either company to really show, you know, what you're capable of. But
right.
I want to kind of take you back to the start of TNA.
Mm-hmm.
When they gave you the ring name Dallas, who mm-hmm. created that? Who came up with that? And what did you think of that as a ring name?
It just kind of happened, man. And I think it was, if I remember correctly, it was they were trying to come up with the name. You know, I'd been working under the gimmick name Shadow on the Independence, and it really didn't fit the situation tagging with Kid Cash. So they were trying to come up with a name, and they were just throwing out town names, city names, and things like that. And finally, I think somebody said, well, where is he from? And they were like, Dallas. And I was like, oh, that's a good name, go. And that's how Dallas was born. You know, and that was fine. I didn't mind Big D, Dallas, you know, and it was cool. It was what it was. And, you know, it lasted until somebody banged it out, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Sticking with creative in TNA, Vince uh-huh. Russo is, I think, is one of those guys, either you really love the guy or you just can't
uh-huh.
stand him. He gets,
uh-huh.
I think, probably a lot of blame, unnecessary blame at times, but I think there's also a lot of blame that he definitely should shoulder. I guess, what is your overall opinion of Vince Russo as a member of the creative staff?
I think Russo always did a good job. He was actually a big supporter of mine. And, you know, when I was there and he was part of the team, he was kind of the third man, a part of that team. You know, Jarrett and Dutch Mantel and those guys were kind of the top of that food chain as far as it was concerned. And then Russo was a part of that. And again, they collectively, creatively created that product, and he was always a supporter of mine, so he definitely gave me chances and opportunities, but there was only so much they could do at certain times. And like you said, I think, you know, Russo unrightfully gets blamed for a lot of things that the fans don't seem to like. I remember specifically there was a few times and the fans were just very not happy, to say the least, about a match or the gimmick that was thrown into the match or whatever the case may be. You know, the big Fire Russo chance would happen, and it would be funny because me as an insider would know that he had nothing to do with that, but the fan base believed he did, and therefore they were blaming him for it. And, you know, I think he's a strong man in that sense because he just kind of let it roll off his back, and he just kept moving forward. And you have to in this business, no matter what your position is, whether you're in creative, whether you own the company, whether you're just the talent on the card, and I say that kind of sparingly when I say just the talent, because really this business exists because the guys that go out there and bust their butt. But regardless of your situation, if you don't have thick skin, you won't last very long because the people, the fans, there's always somebody that's going to be extremely critical and criticize you and tell you you're horrible and you suck and things like that. If you take it too hard, too much, you'll fall, you'll fail. You just kind of have to go and do your thing and say, yeah, whatever, it's cool, I'm going to keep going forward. And as long as you do that, you will. And Russo is real good at doing that, you know. And there's a lot of criticism on him, and most of it, and a lot of it, you know, unrightfully so. And so I think, you know, he's got a very creative mind. And, you know, just and everybody in this business, it doesn't matter where they're at in the top of the business on down. If they come up with an idea, some of them have worked, some of them have not worked. Some of them have been the greatest things ever. Some of them failed beyond belief. You know, so I think Russo's a good guy. I think he's got a good mind, and I think he's got a good thick skin to help him keep going as a creative person in his business.
It seems like TNA has had essentially the same rating. They've always had the same 1.1, 1.2 range. Their house show business has been about the same. It's leveled off over the years. They certainly have a lot of great talent. You got Kurt Angle and Hulk Hogan and AJ Styles. I mean, their talent roster is great.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think TNA is missing? Why do you think that TNA hasn't quite connected with the wrestling fans? And why do you think essentially they're kind of stuck in the mud right now?
Yeah. I'm not trying to be critical of the fans, but this is one of those situations where I put it kind of on the fans of the wrestling business. Again, we do what we do for them because they make it fun. But they have to start accepting other aspects of the business, other companies, other wrestlers, other superstars, you know. And I think a lot of times guys get very stuck on, oh, that guy was that guy, and he was that cool, and nobody else will ever be The Rock and things like that. And it's like, yeah, nobody else will ever be The Rock. But start accepting the new and young guys for what they are and what they can be. And I think a lot of that falls on them. They have to start watching TNA and just enjoying what they're seeing, not looking at Abyss and saying Abyss is something or he's trying to be somebody else, which is absolutely not. Abyss is Abyss. And he's an amazingly agile and great big man in this business. And it's, you know, and AJ Styles, he truly is phenomenal. I mean, I think that name fits him beyond a shadow of a doubt of who he is and what he can do and how long he's continued to excel at as high of a level as he has, you know. And I think if the fan base will just sit back and instead of being so critical, instead of going, ah, he's not this, ah, he's not that, oh, it's just TNA, oh, da-da-da, I think if they start accepting it, it'll actually grow. And so I think a lot of that falls on them. As far as the company is concerned, I think it's just it's point of promoting. If they can learn and figure out a better way to promote themselves at a higher level and a continuous level, again, that comes back to the financial situation. WWE has that kind of resources where they can just hammer it home. The show's coming to town, that you've got to be there. It's on every radio station. There's television ads on every other, you know, channel and every other commercial segment, and TNA doesn't have that, so they're trying to find the smarter ways to promote themselves. And I think if they can continue to do that and work their resources gain to the point where they can do it more often, I think it'll reach more people. Because like with every event that ever happens in entertainment, if nobody knows it's happening, they're not going to come. If they know it's there, then they might more than likely will come if they're wanting to be entertained like that, you know. And I think that's TNA's deal, is finding that way to promote themselves so that people know they're there. And then the people have to be willing to go and accept it and not be so critical of what they're watching and how they're seeing, you know.
You alluded to Sting a little bit earlier that you said mm-hmm. helped you, kind of helped you out and was one of the one of the main reasons you're in professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
What was your reaction when Sting, who had been rumored to possibly go to WWE, possibly be a part of WrestleMania, mm-hmm. what was your thought when Sting made the decision to go back to or to remain loyal to TNA?
I think it's one of those things that you don't see very often in this business. For me, I just, you know, I've known him a little bit, and it was cool, kind of cool because, you know, I think sometimes you meet your heroes in this business or the people that kind of inspired you to be a part of it, and he really was. You know, he was the reason I started watching wrestling when I started watching wrestling. So when I actually got to work with him in TNA, it was really, really cool for me. And he was actually somebody that was super cool. He gave me advice at certain times, had different conversations with him, both in person and on the telephone, and somebody that I respect immensely. So for him to make that decision, you know, I think he made the decision based on what's best for him, his family, and his life, you know. And if he didn't feel like being a part of WWE at this time was conducive for, you know, what he needed to be happening in his life and his professional career, then I think he made a great decision, especially, you know, staying loyal to the TNA. I mean, that's something, again, you don't see hardly at all in this business. And he has that name value, that namesake. He has the financial stability in his life that he can make those kind of decisions. A lot of guys don't have that, and so you simply have to do what you can do and go where you can go. And he has that opportunity because of what he's done in his career. And he's Sting, you know, nobody can change that. And maybe that's part of it. Something was attempting to be changed about that. Who knows? I don't know the exact situation. But, you know, him choosing to stay there, you know, I think it was probably the best decision. And I know him, and I know he waited out, and I know he made a choice that he feels is best for him and his life and his career and his family and so on and so forth. So, you know, I'm happy for him. If that's what he wanted, then I'm happy for him.
You know, you, of course, have wrestled in the Impact Zone several times. What's your thoughts on TNA always booking the Impact Zone for, you know, 99% of their television shows, and a lot of their pay-per-views originate from the Impact Zone in Orlando? I think, you know, kind of tying back to the previous one of the previous questions about, you know, what can TNA do to kind of make it get over the hump? I always think when I watch Impact Zone, it just seems like such a small place that you have, you know, you're supposed to be you're coming off as a major league promotion, and yet there's 1,000 people, and a lot of times you see the same fans on the shows. What's your thoughts on the Impact Zone and possibly, you know, TNA moving out of the Impact Zone, moving some of their pay-per-views to bigger venues?
You know, I mean, for the company and for what they feel like they can spend, you know, the Impact Zone is a stable situation. They know what they've paid. They can put more money into the talent. They can put more money into the graphics. They can put more money into the things that, when you watch the show, make it feel bigger. I mean, if they have to go out and if they just make a total decision to leave the Impact Zone and risk going, you know, because even you were talking about the live events and the house shows not being, you know, as prominent as what WWE does. And if they try to do that on a consistent basis, now the money they have to spend to travel their whole company, maybe it actually hurts their product at this point in comparison to trying to stay in the Impact Zone, regardless of the fact that it feels kind of like, okay, they've been there forever. It feels like it's kind of gotten stale. They see the same people all the time. I think for them and the choices they're making and the things that I know just from the time that I was there, I think they're looking at what can they do to make their product seem bigger while being smart about their budget, you know, and I think, you know, they feel like their biggest concern is if they go out and try to go too much, too far, too soon, they'll spend too much money, and then ultimately it'll be the end of the company, whereas if they choose to stay in the Impact Zone, regardless of the stigma that it's gotten because they've been in that same situation and same place for so long, in the long run, it's probably the smarter choice, which I'm guessing is why they're staying there. And, you know, maybe they should work on changing the format, the shape of the place and how it's set up, you know, and maybe trying to promote to more paying fans. I don't know if that's even a situation they can do, being with their relationship with Universal. You know, and I think for them, it's a smarter choice to stay there right now. You know, if things really start to blossom, if the fans really start to see TNA and their ratings start to shoot up and their house show, you know, numbers start to shoot up, you know, I know they went to North Carolina and they did pretty well. And, you know, once in a while when they go and they do the pay-per-views and the other places, you know, that are a little bit bigger, they do pretty decent. But it's still the money they have to spend to go and do that in comparison to what they're spending at the Impact Zone is so big and so different that I think their choice is to stay there so that they can continue for the long run.
Now, talking about big and different, TNA and WWE, it's actually one of the questions we've gotten from our Twitter page. Can you describe the difference in management style and maybe the creative process between TNA and WWE?
WWE is such a bigger element at this point. You know, there's so many more people involved. You know, so you're dealing with more people. As far as creatively, you know, there's teams in WWE for Raw and SmackDown, and, you know, then there's somebody that's kind of over both teams, and then ultimately you've got Mr. McMahon, and he's the end-all, be-all, and if he doesn't like something, it doesn't matter how much time that somebody's put into it. If Vince thinks that it needs to be changed, it's changed, and I think TNA is more of a collective creative process in comparison, you know, and it's a smaller team. It's a smaller group of people that are kind of controlling the product and working with the wrestlers, the talent, and telling them how they need the matches to come off and things like that. Whereas in WWE, you've got a lot of writers, and, you know, if you've got a promo, you've got different writers, and if you've got a match, you have different agents, and then, you know, you've got somebody that's in charge of them, and somebody's over them, so they have to go to that person, and that person has to go to the next person has to go to Vince McMahon, and Vince McMahon says, yes, I like this, no, I don't like that, okay, change this, and then it goes to that person, it goes back down, and it finally gets back to the talent. And it's a good process as long as everybody communicates well. When communication's lost, I think that's when things can get kind of hectic in WWE. As far as TNA, there's less of that amount of lack of communication or distance of communication. I don't know if that's a better way to say it. But I think if you're a talent and somebody says, hey, this is what they said do, you walk across Universal and you go, hey, so-and-so, I don't know who's in charge necessarily now, and go, hey, is this exactly what you want to do? I'm not feeling this. I'm feeling like it should be done this way. And together you kind of come up with that. So I think that's the biggest difference is the amount of people and the end-all, be-all that's in WWE with Vince McMahon. You know, ultimately it goes back to what he wants to see and what he wants to his product.
And another question coming from Twitter is, did you have a lot of interaction with the McMahons themselves, Vince, Stephanie, and Linda McMahon?
Linda was never there because she was running the Senate. Stephanie, a few times, had some really good conversations. She's super nice, but, you know, she was there. Her and Hunter are developing their family, you know, and they got some beautiful, beautiful children, you know, and they're being great parents. So she was spending that time being a good parent. Mr. McMahon, he was always there, and, you know, you just had to approach him with confidence. And if you did, you know, always shook his hand, always said hello. I never had a bad encounter with him. I know other people who have, and if you get on his wrong side, it can definitely be a bad encounter. But, you know, luckily I didn't have to deal with any bad encounters. But so that was probably my extent of my relationship with the McMahons.
Other than being beautiful, what is Christy Hemme really like?
Super, super cool. She's one of those people that you would, if you were a guy, you would be beyond intimidated by her just because of the way she looks. But once you got to know her, and she's kind of a goofy, cool chick, you know, you sit back and go, wow, I can't believe somebody that's this beautiful is this cool. You know, and I think sometimes you would think, oh, they're going to be stuck up. Oh, they're not going to talk to me. Oh, they're going to be this way. And she's just beyond that. She's one of the coolest chicks I know.
Yeah, one of those girls that are hot, they know they're hot, you know, versus somebody like Chris, like you were saying, Christy, she's hot, but yet she's personable and you can talk to her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Here's kind of a curveball. If you could book yourself, if they say, okay, Lance, we're bringing you back to WWE.
Okay.
We want you to book yourself. We'll book yourself a character, book yourself a feud. What would you come up with?
You know, I think my first thing would be to go right after the world title.
Excellent.
You know, I mean, it's one of those things that people, oh, I want to earn my way. I do want to earn my way up, but I think I deserve to be in that spot. I think physically, athletically, I think entertainingly, if I'm given the opportunity, I'm right up there with anybody that's in this business. So if The Miz needs his teeth knocked in because he's got those big horse teeth and he talks too much, I'm glad to do that. You know, if Christian or Alberto Del Rio becomes champion over on SmackDown, and, you know, if Alberto needs to be brought down a peg because he thinks he's got too much money, I'm going to be the first one to, you know, take a little cash out of his pocket. Or if Christian thinks his peeps are right there with him, I'm going to make his peeps cry because I'll put him in his place. You know, and I think that's where I belong. So you ask where I think I would go and what story I would create, I would just have them hold the title up. I'd run up behind them and turn them around and kick them in their teeth.
I like that. thus far, you've been in the wrestling business for, what, 10 or 11 years now. Mm-hmm. What's been the biggest lesson you've learned?
Learning how to play the game, and I'm not meaning anybody in particular. I'm just saying the
game. You don't mean Hunter.
No, I don't mean the game of professional wrestling, sports entertainment. Just, you know, there's so much more that goes into the business that's not seen. You know, and it's, if you can learn to play that game, if you can learn to work those avenues and put yourself in the right position, I think that's the most important part of this business. That, especially young kids who are coming up and starting on independence and things like that, they have no understanding of. You know, it's such a unique business that encompasses, you know, both the pride of athletes and the ego of actors all rolled up into one business. And, you know, you have to learn to circumnavigate around all that and to accomplish what you need. Like I said, I think too many times I'm too nice and I've not been able to circumnavigate that, and which is why I'm not where I should be. But, yeah, I think it's learning to play that game, learning to be a part of that system and work well within it and work it itself. So,
what is Keiji Muto like?
Who?
The great Muta.
Oh, Muta, yeah. You know, when I worked with All Japan, he was super cool. He actually liked, you know, what I was doing with the Voodoo Murders when I was in All Japan. Didn't really get to talk to him a lot. You know, I saw him interacting with a lot of his guys and some of the stuff he did on his shows and whatnot, and it's cool to kind of see him in full element when he goes out there and he does his thing in front of the crowd.
What's been the biggest rib played on you?
A lot of ribs played on me. I don't pull a lot of ribs, and B, I think people are kind of afraid if they do, what's going to happen. You know, and so I haven't had, I haven't really had a lot of ribs pulled on me because, like I said, you know, I think they're either A, worried about the repercussions, or B, you know, they just they don't want to.
That's where your size and your intimidation comes into play, right?
Well, I think that does, but I think I'm an unknown element because, you know, I'm pretty quiet and, you know, I keep to myself and I have my friends and I'm very respectful and things like that. So people don't know. They're like, okay, we don't know what's going to happen. If we come at him the wrong way, what's he going to do to us? And have no idea. And I think that the element of unknowing is what keeps people kind of in check.
One of the questions I get asked a lot, where is Monty Brown and what is he doing these days?
Oh, Monty Brown, he's in Michigan with his family. He's a personal trainer. He actually does, he's working with a lot of young kids who, because, you know, he played in the NFL, achieved a high level in college, achieved a high level into the NFL and whatnot. He's working with a lot of young kids who are, A, high school kids trying to get into a college, very sports-specific personal training, or kids who are in college and they're looking to jump to that next level of professional football. He's taking a lot of the knowledge that he's gained through that and his training ability and things like that, and he's working with those young kids and trying to help them accomplish their goals. And he's doing great, man. I mean, through text messages, talked to him the other day and whatnot. I'm trying to get him to come to Texas and hang out with me for a little bit. He hates the heat, so that's why he stays up in Michigan. Like, I can't stand the cold, so.
I tell you, I think that's one of the guys I really do miss. I thought, you know, when they brought him from TNA to WWE, I thought he was kind of on the verge of being a huge star, and he had such potential, and I think he improved so much, had a great promo, had a great look, and it's just too bad we don't get a chance to see him anymore, you know?
Yeah, you know, like he had a lot of family stuff that he needed to take care of, and I think him
right.
and WWE understood that, and they had to move forward, and they needed him to make a decision, and he did, and you know, you have to commend the man for taking care of himself and his family first. So.
Absolutely, absolutely, no doubt about that. How about Matt Bentley?
I have no clue what Matt's up to these days. I haven't heard from him or anything. Last time I even heard, he was doing a little bit of wrestling again, but again, I don't know. I haven't spoken to him or seen him or talked to him at all.
When you're out and about, you know, going to the gym or going to a restaurant or going to the grocery store, are you recognized?
Sometimes. I think, you know, the people who are hardcore fans, you know, and even my hair is back a little bit longer and I changed my facial hair up a little bit. So I think sometimes people who are hardcore fans, they kind of go, is that? But they don't know for sure. I get more just because, I don't know, the size and the look, people think he's got to be something. And they don't know exactly what. And they're like, you're either a wrestler or you're a rock star. I'm not even saying I'm a rock star. But that's their mind. They just have no idea. They go, this guy's something. And with MMA being as it is, I get MMA a lot now.
Oh, are you a big MMA fan?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
I respect this sport immensely because the people I started in wrestling with own a gym. And right now their primary focus is MMA. It's actually called The Gym. You can check them out at thegym.org. But they run a MMA program called XKO, and they're doing really well with it and everything like that. And it's an amazing family, and they've done so much for me in the business and whatnot. So, you know, they're good people. And so I support them. I usually try to go and watch their shows. And they do an amazing job. But I'm not a huge fan of MMA, but I respect the time that these guys have to put in to train and to get to where they are, you know.
If TNA calls today or calls tomorrow and wants to bring you back, do you go back to them, or are you kind of holding out for WWE to call you back?
No, man. I for me, it's just a point of working, and it's if TNA wants me to be a part of their product, I'm ready to go and ready to work. If WWE calls me and they want me to be back with them and work with their product, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to work. I personally think I'm a talent in this business. That's my personal belief. Whether people agree with me or not, I think I am. So whatever company chooses to come along and use me and take me into that, then I'm ready to go. I'm ready to work.
Well, I definitely agree with that. You're a talent. We like to see more of you for sure. Has there been any interest from Ring of Honor?
None that I know of.
Okay.
But I don't, you know.
who is a better partner, Curt Hawkins or Jimmy Rave?
They're both awesome, and I say that because they both had such unique personalities and abilities and their ring work. Like I said, Jimmy was somebody that, you know, he was so smooth in the ring. I mean, he transitioned from move to move, from situation to situation. It was effortless, and it was amazing. It was beautiful to watch, really, you know, and I think that's kind of a weird way to say it, but it was. Kurt was just, he was attitude personified. Another guy that I think if WWE just would give him that chance to be who he is, they've got a diamond in the rough, and it's, you know, again, the business is the way it is, and you can only do with what you're given. But, you know, he's one of those guys that he just has all that, he has that bravado, that attitude, that swagger that they need, and he has it, and if they give him that chance, and he's got the ability in the ring, I don't take anything away from his ability in the ring, but that attitude is really what I think would excel him if they gave him an opportunity.
I know, you know, obviously I follow you on Twitter, and occasionally you have people that will encourage TNA to bring you back, and you retweet that. Have you gotten anything from TNA? Have they called you back, or at least do you get the sense that at least keeping an eye on you at this point?
I definitely have the sense that they're keeping an eye on me. I just think, again, you know, like we talked earlier, that it's a situation of does it fit at this moment? It's not a point of there is interest there. It's not a point of there not being interest. It's just a point of where can it go? Because, again, they only have 1 2-hour program, and really in 2 hours they've, you know, an hour and 30 minutes maybe of actual TV time, taking out the commercials and stuff like that, and with the amount of guys that they have on the roster and what they're trying to do, I understand that part. I feel like I would fit anywhere they could put me, but in their creative minds, they have to find that place for me. And I think eventually somebody will. One of the companies is going to come around and go, okay, we can put him right here, and there I go.
What advice would you give somebody that's kind of young and – because occasionally I get emails from people say, you know, I'm 16, I'm 17, I'm graduating from high school. I really want to get into wrestling. I want to be a wrestler. I want to be a manager, or I want to be a valet. What advice would you give a person like that?
Be prepared to put in the work and the time. I think I deal with a lot of young kids who have a lot of talent on the independent level. I mean, you know, at this point, if I never get back up to the major leagues, my idea is to help out whoever I can, to take whatever little bit of knowledge that I've gained, my experience, and if I can help some of these younger kids who have that new desire, that new passion, and I can help direct them in the right way, that's kind of what I would like to do. And I run across a lot of them. They come up to me and, you know, they're like, Lance, I mean, I try so hard and I can't get there and this and that. And I'm like, A, it's entertainment business, so you have to be in the right place at the right time to get that right opportunity. You can be in front of them 200 times and they just don't have anything for you. And that one time you show up and they go, hey, we can use him right there. And there you go. I mean, look at Alberto Del Rio's ring announcer, Ricardo. I think he showed up. They said, hey, can you do this? And he said, yeah. And that's where he came about. I mean, that's time and opportunity, place and, you know, right place, right time. And look what he's getting to do now. So a lot of these kids don't understand that. And then they don't, in my opinion, there's a lot of kids out there that think what they can do in the ring is the only thing that's going to be judged. And they have very lackluster gear and their physical, you know, the way they look is just is very not good. I don't know how else to say it without being mean. And there's just, you know, they don't understand. They're like, oh, why am I not there? I'm so talented. And it's like, you think you're talented, but you really don't understand the business well enough to succeed in it yet, and then you're not marketable. And I try to tell some kids that, and I try to be nice about it, but I'm like, what? How can you be marketed? What about you says, I'm a superstar? And a lot of them don't understand it. It's like they're not looking in the mirror and they're not seeing what they need to work on. And the ones who do know, they start working on it. They start changing things. They work to get some better gear. They work to change their bodies in a positive manner. They study, you know, how they do their promos and how they work in the ring and so on and so forth. And those are the ones that start to move forward and excel and start to do more in the business rather than just their local independent market.
We're finishing up with Lance Hoyt, the former Vance Archer in WWE. And lastly, Lance, how can people get a hold of you? I know you're on Twitter, you're on Facebook. Why don't you plug that and also plug any shows you got coming up.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. Like I said, if you guys want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Lance Hoyt. Facebook is Lance Hoyt, and there's a picture of my video game avatar on there, and I think there's a few of the Facebooks out there. Those guys aren't me. send me a message and I'll tell you whether it's me or not. I have a show this Saturday coming up in Texas City, Texas. It's for a company called CWF, and then I have some shows coming up in May. May 21st is my NWA Southwest Texas Championship. I'm the NWA Texas champion right now, and I'm defending that. And then a couple other shows, I'm not going to mention them just because they haven't been set in stone yet, but several other shows that are coming up and coming about. So check those out.
Oh, one final question. I know in Mexico they like to book some of the bigger guys. You got Jindrak and a couple of Sean O'Hare, I think, went down there for a time. Plumbo was down there for a time. Mm-hmm. Has there been any interest from either like AAA or CMLL to bring you down to Mexico?
I think with them, a lot of it has to do with my availability to stay in Mexico. And right now I have my home and my family that I have to take care of, and going and living in Mexico right now is not something that I can do. And I think that's kind of the deciding factor. If they were able to use me, and I think there is interest there, it's a point of me going and living in Mexico for a time being. And at this moment, I have something I can't do. So, I mean, it's just, that's kind of how it is, unfortunately.
Well, not to mention, we want to see you either back in WWE or TNA real soon. And Lance, we really appreciate your time today. This has been a great interview. And as we said, we wish you all the best of luck in the future.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate you guys having me on. Keep an eye out on the horizon because I'm coming.